This program is provided by a trusted partner of the church and is educational, inspirational, and uplifting. It does not necessarily represent the official position of the church.
In the historical department, it's a treasure house of all of the Mormon past. It's like the Vatican Library for Mormonism.
Yeah.
And we have as much as we've been able to gather people over time, over 150 years of gathering materials. But still, there are undoubtedly Joseph Smith items still out somewhere out in the world.
Coming up next, The Teachings of Joseph Smith, Part 1.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormon Channel now presents The Joseph Smith Papers.
K-Jazz Television, in cooperation with the Church History Department of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, presents this weekly series highlighting the research of scholars and historians as they prepare for the publication of the Joseph Smith Papers. And now your host, Glenn Rawson.
Tonight we bring you the first of a two-part series on the teachings of Joseph Smith. Now originally, those teachings came in the form of sermons, letters, minutes of meetings, and other things. The new Church History Library in Salt Lake contains many of the original sources for those things. And we have today this new manual. It represents perhaps the culmination of Joseph Smith's teachings. But it is not the first attempt that was ever made to compile his teachings and or his words. That began as early as the prophet's own lifetime with his own history.
Ronald O. Barney.
That history, all put together, contains many of the teachings of Joseph Smith. Excerpts from the notes that were taken of a number of his sermons. Other kinds of things, such as his epistles, were captured in that very, very important collection of materials. Early on, the revelations were received by Joseph Smith, and they found their first publication in The Evening and the Morning Star, beginning in June of 1832. And a number of the revelations were published in that light, including the Articles and Covenants of the Church, the so-called Constitution of the Church, which was so important early on. But an actual compilation of Joseph Smith's teachings, other than the compilation of revelations that appeared first in the Book of Commandments, and then 2 years later, in the summer of 1835, the Book of Doctrine and Covenants, other than those compilation of revelations, Joseph Smith had never made an effort to compile his teachings, compile the sermons that he delivered.
While a few of the teachings of the prophet appeared in a serialized form through the 1840s, it wasn't until an entire generation later that the first compilations of Joseph Smith's teachings appeared.
Beginning in 1881, in the church periodical titled The Contributor, which was the church organ for the Young Men and the Young Women's Mutual Improvement Association, in a series of articles titled The Sermons and the Writings of the Prophet Joseph Smith, excerpts appeared from things that Joseph Smith had said that had been published in the Times and Seasons and in the Deseret News, in that larger serialization, The History of Joseph Smith. Franklin D. Richards, a member of the Quorum of the Twelve, and James A. Little published a volume entitled A Compendium. And what this was an effort to gather together some of the summary teachings and beliefs of the church. At the end of that volume, there was an inclusion entitled Gems from the History of Joseph Smith.
At the beginning of the 20th century, between 1902 and 1912, a significant work was published by the church. the importance of which cannot be overstated with regards to Joseph Smith's teachings. It would shape for 100 years how Latter-day Saints would view Joseph Smith and his teachings.
Elder B.H. Roberts of the 70 had been working for some time editing the serialization, The History of Joseph Smith, which he turned into The History of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, Period 1, The History of Joseph Smith. This six-volume compilation by Elder Roberts, the sixth volume taking place in being published in 1912, included most all that the Latter-day Saints knew at that time about what Joseph Smith had said, not only about himself, but the teachings that he had given to the church. To overstate its importance would be difficult. Not long after that sixth volume in the history of the church was published, a man by the name of Edwin F. Perry published a little volume titled Joseph Smith's Teachings, a Classified Arrangement of the Doctrinal Sermons and Writings of the Great Latter-day Prophet. This little volume, which was very convenient to use, obviously sparked the imagination of people as they had really for the first time a little volume that was portable, it was consumable, and it was a distillation of some of the important teachings of Joseph Smith.
In 1938, Elder Joseph Fielding Smith, apostle and LDS church historian, published another landmark compilation of teachings. It was called The Teachings of the Prophet Joseph Smith.
A survey was taken some years ago amongst Latter-day Saint church educators about the most influential book that they had encountered in their teaching in understanding the gospel of Jesus Christ, and Joseph Fielding Smith's compilation of the teachings of the prophet Joseph Smith came up number one. There were a number of other efforts that were made thereafter to compile the teachings of Joseph Smith. In the mid-1950s, a church educator by the name of Alma Burton published the Discourses of the prophet Joseph Smith. But later on, in 1980, there was a volume that was produced that I think is of great consequence. It was compiled by Andrew F. Ehat and Lyndon W. Cook, titled The Words of Joseph Smith. Now, while this volume contained just the sermons during Joseph Smith's tenure in Nauvoo from 1839 to his death in 1844, these were not excerpts. These were the full texts of sermons based upon the original documents.
One of those compilers, Andrew Ehat, talked about some of the impressions that he garnered of Joseph Smith while he was preparing his sermons for publication.
Andrew F. Ehat.
If I had to characterize Joseph Smith, he was a plain preacher of the gospel of Jesus Christ. He could thrill an audience with his understanding of the gospel and with the enthusiasm and the absolute certainty of his witness of Jesus Christ, and he could then also at the same time move them to great emotion because of the sublimity of the thoughts that God had revealed to him. The prophet Joseph Smith, over and over again, was able to take a crowd from humor and lightness to feelings of ecstasy and sublimity. He had a power that was an amazing power. So many refer to these things later in reminiscence and can only speak maybe to their feelings instead of the details of what he said. But the lasting feeling was the important thing. It made them and helped them to weather the great storms of going west, the expulsion from Nauvoo and other places. the power of the Word, the oral communication of God's will to these people, energized them and made it possible for them to have a fire of the covenant within their souls that allowed them to go through every trial, trouble, and tribulation. During that period prior to Nauvoo, he had a spokesman identified by the Lord in Section 100 of the Doctrine and Covenants, namely Sidney Rigdon. And he served as that spokesman valiantly during those years. During the Nauvoo period, the prophet Joseph Smith developed his own voice and stood forth as the primary spokesperson for the church. He was preparing a people that to receive the blessings of the temple and the fundamental doctrine of eternalism that it expresses in both its ordinances and the teachings that would be provided therein.
Near the turn of the last century, Donald Q. Cannon and Larry E. Dahl, educators, BYU professors, published what came to finally be called Encyclopedia of Joseph Smith's Teachings. There was it was first published in 1997, and then a subsequent edition came out in the year 2000. This is an important volume. It's expanded beyond the teachings of the prophet Joseph Smith to include historical features of his life as well. But it is a compilation of excerpts arranged in a topical fashion that makes it very useful.
The study of Joseph Smith's teachings also left Professor Cannon with distinct impressions about the prophet.
Donald Q. Cannon.
In addition to the doctrinal things, one does learn something about his personality. You can't help but do that. He did have a sense of humor. Joseph loved people. He loved to be with them. But he used colorful language. In that sense, he was like Abraham Lincoln, very folksy, colorful in his expressions. Just one little statement, "Hit pigeons always flutter." I think that brings to mind action, and it's a word picture that we can relate to.
In a letter dictated to a scribe in November of 1843, Joseph Smith revealed something of the responsibility that he felt, not only for the teaching of the saints, but for the entire human family.
"I stood alone, an unlearned youth, to combat the worldly wisdom and multiplied ignorance of 18 centuries with a new revelation, which, if they would receive the everlasting gospel, would open the eyes of more than 800 millions of people and make plain the old paths, wherein if a man walk in all the ordinance of God, blameless, he shall inherit eternal life." Here's this unlearned youth from the backwoods of New York who's the one who's going to, if they will listen, tell the 800 million people living at that time what they should do in order to achieve salvation. There's no shadow of doubt, no questioning, no shades of should we or shouldn't we do this. There is a surety and a conviction that's just amazing. And again, born of the visions and the experiences that he had that were so powerful.
Through revelation, Joseph Smith was told, "Remember that that which cometh from above is sacred and must be spoken with care and by constraint of the Spirit." Now, not only did Joseph Smith learn that, but he also learned by his own experience that the public expression of some revelatory information aroused misunderstanding, even hostility. This may be the reason why some of the prophet's teachings were not more widely taught.
Melvin L. Bashur.
So understand that kind of Puritan thinking. And so they had a certain cultural expectations, and Joseph was a new voice, a prophet that had not been heard on this continent, in the world. And so I think he was hesitant to bring some of his teachings that he had learned from God to the fore for fear that how people might react. I think it's natural.
As he addressed the issue of bringing forth more of the word of the Lord, it was clear also that certain of his teachings would not be ones that could be publicly taught. And therefore, he did entrust those to certain individuals. He also realized that he would teach things in Nauvoo in open discourse that wasn't to go beyond Nauvoo. But when he spoke by the Spirit, he also expected individuals to hear and understand things, but they would have to treasure up in their own hearts, even though it was given an open public discourse. And then they were charged not to teach these things when they went on their missions. Leave the mysteries alone and go and teach the fundamental principles of the gospel. When they gather, they'll come to the temple and they will receive these greater things. So in those ways, the prophet Joseph Smith had prepared them, expecting effectively that his sermons would have only the effect they would have on the individuals actually hearing them, not necessarily to be recorded and published and released to the entire world.
From the time before the LDS Church was organized in 1830, Joseph Smith received revelations, and these eventually became a part of the scriptural canon. But the prophet's revelations and teachings were not confined to just those that began with, "Thus saith the Lord."
We need to take a look at the time period during which Joseph Smith received the canonized revelations of the church. Most of them were given prior to 1836. Indeed, there was a spike of revelations that were given in 1831 that number 38 revelations. And as the numbers diminish, some have erroneously concluded that Joseph Smith stopped receiving the kinds of revelations that he received before. We need to be reminded that Joseph Smith continued to receive revelations. Indeed, after this time period, he gave epistles to the church, delivered them in printed form that were significant for the Latter-day Saints. But once the saints got into Nauvoo, we see a remarkable outpouring of revelatory information via the sermons that he delivered to the church. Indeed, in 1843, Joseph Smith delivered over 50 sermons in and around Nauvoo.
Latter-day Saints today have a great interest in the teachings of Joseph Smith, despite the fact that much of what he taught was never recorded. Now, for a number of years, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has published the teachings of the presidents of the church as Priesthood and Relief Society curriculum. This volume on the teachings of Joseph Smith required an extraordinary effort to produce.
Anticipating that the church would produce a volume as a part of the series on the teachings of the presidents of the church, that the church would produce a volume on Joseph Smith, work was initiated by the Church Historical Department in ensuring that we could create a database for the curriculum department that would help them put together this volume, which would complement the other volumes that contain teachings of presidents of the church. We were given an assignment to arrange the teachings in a way that a member of a curriculum committee could be able to ascertain fairly quickly the reliability of the teaching, plus the entirety of the text that had been produced in that given circumstance, that would help curriculum members be able to understand what they had in front of them.
At this point, the Venerable Dean Jesse once more made an invaluable contribution to the work. For some 20 years, he had labored to assemble and transcribe every known sermon credited to Joseph Smith. He gave the entire work to them, and it became their starting point.
We then arranged the material that Dean Jesse gave to us and expanded beyond what he had given us to some things that had become that we had become aware of later on.
Ron and I divided it up. He was going to take the manuscript materials and I would take the printed materials. And started to do that. This is back in the days when searching for material, we were just on the cusp of using electronic searching techniques where some of the early Mormon materials, printed materials, Times and Seasons, some of those things had been digitized and or rather not digitized. They'd been entered into an electronic text searching medium. And so some of those things were easy to find. Then I had to rely on the old library searching techniques of thumbing through books, old newspapers, trying to find what either the prophet Joseph had said or reminiscences of what people had said that he'd said. After Joseph Smith had died and had been dead for 20 years or so, wards in Utah started holding sacrament meetings or having the old-timers try and recall their memories of Joseph Smith. And usually these were done around the time of Joseph Smith's birthday. And so I started going through old minute books, looking for these obscure references that, that had been recorded by clerks back in those old wards in Utah of old-timers and their memories of what Joseph Smith was like as a person or memories of what they said about what he had said during their hearing. I was most interested in those kind of early impressions that people had. They often remembered the very first time that they remembered Joseph Smith.
Well, between what Mel Bayshore did and what we did in compiling the rest of the material, we ended up producing in typescript form, single-spaced, 17 3-inch binders of material, which we delivered to the church curriculum department for the curriculum writing committee to produce the manual that was used in 2008 and 2009.
Now, it was not enough just to collect the teachings of Joseph Smith, as difficult as that was. Considering the disparate sources and the reminiscent accounts that comprise Joseph Smith's teachings, something had to be done to authenticate them. Hence, they came up with this elaborate classification system that enabled the curriculum writers to judge whether or not this was really a bona fide teaching of Joseph Smith or not.
We decided to classify the teachings of Joseph Smith in this way. If something was directly attributable to Joseph Smith, we gave it a capital A. If it was something that he wrote himself or that we knew in absolute certainty was a dictation from Joseph Smith, we would give it a capital A and lowercase a. If it was something that we knew that Joseph Smith had said, but that was in the handwriting of someone else, and that we could not exactly have it come out of his mouth or from his pen, we would give it a capital A, lowercase b. If it was something that was a clerk's copy of a manuscript, where there was still some a feature of uncertainty as exactly as to what the circumstances were about its production, but we knew that it came from Joseph Smith, we gave it a capital A, lowercase c. If it was a contemporary document that had been attributed to the entirety of the First Presidency, but that still had the imprimatur of Joseph Smith on it, we would give it a capital A, lowercase d. if it was something that we were certain we could attribute to Joseph Smith, but it was in someone else's writing and there was nothing to indicate that Joseph Smith had crafted it, we would still give it a capital A, lowercase d. And if it was something that we still felt was attributable to Joseph Smith, but that there was no identification of him having been the source of it, we would give it a capital A, lowercase e. When it came to people who were other than Joseph, who said that Joseph said things, such as his family members or intimate associates like members of the Quorum of the Twelve, we would give a capital B to those. If it were common Latter-day Saints who happened to be in a congregation who heard Joseph Smith deliver a sermon and then captured the notes, some of the notes of those sermons in their diary or in some other form, we would give it a capital C. If it was someone who had been a Latter-day Saint, who had said something that later on through time that they had heard Joseph Smith say this, but that they perhaps had a motive that may not have been in a supportive way, we would give it a capital letter D.
Now, of course, a number of Joseph Smith's close associates and regular church members also noted in their personal records important teachings that he delivered to the saints. A system of categorizing these other sources was also created, and then there were two other factors that figured into the categorizing of Joseph Smith's teachings.
Then there were two other qualifications that we would use to classify the material. Qualification of time. Was it a contemporary report? Was it written within a year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, or 20+ years? And many things that have been circulated through the years that people have attributed to Joseph Smith come in that kind of a light. And we would identify about when or precisely when those reports were made. And lastly, is this an eyewitness report or is it a secondhand report? Is it something that was produced by an individual who actually heard Joseph Smith say it or watch him write it? Something to that effect, which would give a feature of veracity to it that would trump something that was hearsay or second or third hand.
At this point, a committee of four scholars from the church's historical department reviewed every document in the vast compilation to classify all those things considered a teaching of Joseph Smith. Now, when we come back, we'll talk about the efforts of the curriculum department and their editors to create this new manual. Next week, The Teachings of Joseph Smith, Part 2. I'm Glenn Rawson. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to the Joseph Smith Papers here on the Mormon Channel, a production of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.